Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. I'm Rob Bartlett, and in today's episode, we're going to be discussing how to engage senior management at companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals. I really look to answer the question of how can we talk about process safety with them using language that they understand and that they use on a day in and day out basis, hopefully to improve how process safety is managed at those higher levels. So joining me today is one of our wonderful teammates here at Amplify Process Safety, Molly Myers. Hey, Molly.
Hello.
So what are we going to be, how are we going to approach this podcast?
Yeah, so we're going to take it in two pieces here. First, we're going to talk about why is it important for senior management to understand process safety. So what do they need to know about process safety? And again, in language that they're used to working with. And then also talk a little bit about how senior management can use that information to lead the company in a way that ensures process safety receives a high priority like it should.
Okay. So if we're in a company that handles highly hazardous chemicals, whether it's flammables, toxics, explosives, whatever, obviously those in senior management need to understand about process safety and why it's important. And I think we're going to start off with the first question that you said, why is it important for senior management to understand process safety? And probably, you know, in my mind, senior managers always like numbers. So so how do we pull numbers into this?
Yeah, so we've got some numbers for them. And this is courtesy of the Chemical Safety Board, a very good resource that is an independent government agency that investigates process safety incidents. And they provide valuable incident investigation reports on those incidents, looking at root causes and making recommendations to try and keep similar incidents from happening in the future.
Okay.
So we've kind of reviewed a lot of their incident reports since they started doing these investigations in 1998. I counted about 99 incidents. Some of those were multiple small incidents that they combined into a single report. But of those, we noted 254 fatalities, 1,960 injuries, which is not just to company employees, but in many cases, it involved injuries to members of the public. Okay. Some of these also included fatalities that were members of the public. And of those 99 incidents, about a third of them, or 34, had offsite impacts. And that could have been shelter-in-place orders. It could be property damage to the surrounding neighborhoods, businesses, houses, and so forth. Could have been toxic releases or injuries and so forth. So those are some numbers that would probably have some impact with upper management.
Yeah, those are numbers.
Why this is important.
Yeah, those are numbers we don't want to be a part of. And also just one caveat to those numbers is that that's just the casualties, let's just say, from the incidents that the CSB has investigated. There are many incidents that occur that they decide not to, for various reasons, decide not to investigate. So since 1998, there certainly have been more casualties than those numbers indicate. But what we have from CSB, that's the total. So that's a lot of that's a lot of impact in what, about 25 years, I guess. So
yes,
that is many more than we certainly want. Okay.
That's kind of a broad brush, but let's talk a little bit more specifics on some of these incidents that people may or may not be familiar with.
Yeah, so the one that we're going to talk about here is one of the, I don't know, most infamous incidents certainly in the last 25 years. And if you make a list of the major process safety incidents of all, you know, in history, this certainly hits that list. And that is the BP Texas City explosion that happened in March of 2005. So we are getting fairly close to the 20-year anniversary of that catastrophic event. So in a nutshell, it was a series of explosions that occurred at this refinery, this British Petroleum refinery, during the restart of what's called their isomerization unit. So there was kind of a string of errors that ended up with large explosions, resulted in 15 fatalities, 180 injuries. And most of those fatalities and injuries actually happened in or near temporary office trailers, which had been set up nearby for contractors to use during the turnaround that they were, the maintenance turnaround that they were doing. So they were starting up from that maintenance turnaround. And unfortunately, there were many more people in that area than it would have normally had during operations. And that's one of the things that led to it being such a terrible loss of life. There was a shelter in place order for 43,000 community residents nearby. Houses were damaged up to 3/4 of a mile away from the facility. That's a long way to have house damage. Just shows you how much energy was involved in the explosions. The company sustained $3 billion in damage and legal settlements. After the incident, OSHA uncovered 301 egregious willful violations for which BP paid a $21 million fine. And a key finding from the Chemical Safety Board was that this incident was caused by organizational and safety deficiencies at all levels of the corporation, which does include senior management. So, as I said, this is one of the real kind of fundamental process safety incidents that significantly impacted BP, obviously.
And the whole community.
Impacted the community, yeah.
Well, those 43 residents are going to remember that for quite a while and probably not fondly.
Not in a good way. No, absolutely. So that's a little bit about one of the incidents that had the most impact on the facility and on human life and the surrounding community and all. So, I mean, obviously, not every facility is BP Texas City. Obviously, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But so the scale here may be larger than most folks who listen to this podcast and their senior managers would need to worry about. But still, these are things that can happen very easily when you're handling highly hazardous chemicals. And so another way to look at this whole issue of how do you communicate these concepts to upper management is what we frequently call like a business case. Like, what's the business case for this? Mm-hmm. So Molly, I think you were going to talk about that next.
Yeah. So CCPS, Center for Chemical Process Safety, it's a division of AICHE, American Institute of Chemical Engineers, provides a lot of good resource. And one of the white papers that they do have available for members and on their website is a business case for process safety. And it goes over 5 key pillars or categories of why upper management might see value in prioritizing process safety for the company. The first one is corporate social responsibility. And it gets into, as we talked about with this BP Texas City incident, where they impacted 43,000 community residents. Obviously, that did away with a lot of goodwill that they may have been trying to foster with their mm-hmm. community. So mm-hmm. the corporate social responsibility focuses on building a good reputation with employees, your community, your governments, insurers, investors, and so forth. If you have that good reputation, that can go a long ways towards enhancing your business prospects moving forward. Conversely,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Conversely,
if you end up with shelter in place impacts or damage people's houses and so forth, that takes away from that political capital, if you will. So that's the first pillar is corporate social responsibility. The next one is business flexibility. So focusing on process safety can remove barriers to growth. So in other words, if you look at resources that your company has available to muster towards improving your business, if you are instead utilizing those resources to investigate incidents, find out what happened and resolve problems like what might have happened at BP Texas City, there are an awful lot of resources that go into that. And if you're using them to investigate incidents, you're not using them to improve your products or your operability or your throughput or any of that sort of stuff. So focusing on process safety gives you flexibility with your business resources at hand. Loss prevention, as we talked about this BP Texas City, they sustained $3 billion in damages and legal settlements. From a corporate standpoint, that $3 billion, I'm sure, could have gone a long way towards
anything
improving
else
business.
Would be better. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. So loss prevention not only preserves your capital in terms of damages, it's also legal costs, it's also insurance costs, everything that goes into that. If you have a strong process safety system, you're focusing on that loss prevention and keeping those dollars out of the bucket for, you know, investigation and cleanup and so forth, and directing them to more productive uses.
Yeah.
Sustainable growth. So process safety systems lead towards operational excellence. That's a key buzzword that many managers may be familiar with, focusing on improving productivity, decreasing production costs, increasing your capital efficiency. So process safety feeds into all of those tasks. It is a way of continually improving your process. It includes a lot of operator training, procedures, and making things more consistent, more robust, and it all goes into that same sustainable growth that many business leaders are already talking about.
Yeah, I actually have a anecdotally, I mean, I don't know of data that's available for this, but I was recently speaking to a director of manufacturing for a large company, and this topic came up. He mentioned how he feels that his best sites are the ones that have good PSM programs. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, do you have any data that shows that? And he's like, well, not official data, but he pulled up, you know, his dashboard that he had made for all his different sites. And he's like, all right, so here's a facility that is quite good at PSM. And, you know, I don't know, say there's 100 different boxes. Mm-hmm. By far, most of them are green, couple of yellows, couple of reds, but most of them are green. Mm-hmm. So I said, all right. And he said, he says, let me show you another one. Here's one that really struggles with PSM. It was virtually all red. So anecdotally, right. Anyway, this does hold true that improving safety, and in this case, process safety systems and culture, spills over to other parts of operability. So I think that definitely is an important reason why that kind of topic should be in this business mm-hmm. case for process safety. All right, we got one more?
Yeah, the last one is leadership excellence. So process safety, one of the elements of process safety is employee participation. And it focuses on getting active cooperation, participation, and leadership up and down the organization mm-hmm. to make all of these process safety systems work correctly and gets people involved with understanding the process and improving the process. And that leads to leadership excellence. The more people you have actively leading and working to enhance your business, all the better. And so process safety requires everyone to participate, and it grooms people for future leadership roles within the company.
Absolutely. And leadership happens at all levels of the organization. So we're talking primarily about upper management and, you know, mm-hmm. High level leadership. But we're also talking here specifically about not only just getting for the future, but for today, the more leaders you have at all levels of your organization, the better you're going to be. And if PSM can, and process safety systems can provide some way to develop that leadership, then there's benefits across the board. So
exactly.
So there's some information about a business case for process safety. Now let's turn to the second question that you asked earlier, which is, how can senior management lead the company to ensure that process safety is a high priority? This is a difficulty, right? Like, they're like, well, I'm in the C-suite here, you know, at headquarters. I don't get out to the plants. What sorts of things should I be worrying about? So let's spend a little time talking about that.
Yeah. So as we talked about earlier, numbers speak volumes to upper management.
Yep. They like numbers. Absolutely.
So obviously they're interested in keeping a viable business moving forward. Mm-hmm. Not only do process safety incidents have an impact on people in terms of fatalities and injuries, which is what you and I are often most focused on.
Yep.
But it also adversely affects businesses.
Absolutely.
As I talked about with those chemical safety board incidents, we looked at how many of them had a distinct business impact, not just the Texas City issues of spending billions of dollars on legal costs and rebuilding and all of that sort of stuff, but actually getting down to the nitty-gritty of putting businesses out of business.
Yep.
And of those incidents that we looked at, 12 of them resulted in complete destruction or closure of a facility.
So hold on. That's out of 99 incidents, or at least reports or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's over 10% of these resulted in the facility either being totally destroyed and or just closing flat out.
Right.
Wow.
Right. So that's pretty significant.
That's significant.
And of those incidents, two of them involve companies that went completely out of business.
So that incident was a company killer.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't just a single site. You know, you may have businesses with, you know, a handful of sites or maybe even hundreds of sites. 12 of the incidents completely destroyed or shut down one of those sites. Two of them, the entire business, regardless of how many sites they had, they went out of business.
Yeah.
So those are some numbers that will have an impact with upper management if they want to continue having a job as a viable company. So treating process safety is important, needs to be prioritized because it protects people, communities, your facility's right to operate, and protects your business. As we talked about, if you're impacting your community, they can have an adverse impact on your right to operate, whether that be public opinion, which can lead to regulatory issues, maybe communities prohibiting expansions and things of that sort. So treating process safety is important from a business standpoint because it affects all of those aspects of doing business in a community.
Yep. And I've been involved in a couple of incidents where let's just say the facility had a very difficult time regaining their right to operate from the local officials after a major incident. So that is definitely a real thing. So just like we talked about the BP Texas City, we also want to talk here about another incident that happened. This one a year earlier in 2004. It was at the Formosa Plastics facility in Iliopolis, Illinois. That's another one of these ones that people refer to quite frequently. And in this incident, an operator overrode a critical valve safety interlock on a pressurized vessel that was making polyvinyl chloride, or PVC. So that resulted in vinyl chloride liquid and vapor being discharged into the plant, which was very flammable. And it ignited and resulted in a massive explosion, 5 fatalities, 3 serious injuries, the fire actually burned for several days, which tells you a little bit about how difficult it was to extinguish. A shelter in place was issued for 150 community residents. So not as big as the Texas City one, but I'm sure it was pretty important for those 150 residents that were fearing for their lives and safety and all that. The facility never reopened and was demolished. And the CSB concluded that Formosa had not adequately considered the potential effects of human error. So that, you know, should have been part of their PHA process, and they did not adequately consider that.
So that was one case where it didn't shut down the whole business.
Nope.
But they did have to close that entire facility, which has a big impact, not just on the business, but to the communities.
That's huge. And the people there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I live in Southern Maine, and we've had, not necessarily related to process safety, but we've had paper companies, large paper mills over the years, you know, they one by one, they've kind of stopped operating. And it is a big impact on the local community, not just the people who work there, but the people who operate businesses that serve that facility. The effects are definitely wide. So Molly, what does good look like when we're prioritizing process safety kind of at a high level, like we're talking about here with upper management?
Yeah. So first off, I know it's probably hard for upper management, but don't overemphasize the bottom line. As we've talked about, there are a lot of other things and costs that can creep in when you don't follow good process safety practices, like these incident expenses and things of that sort. So don't overemphasize the bottom line and shortchange process safety. Mm-hmm. Also, safety. And in our world, process safety needs to be in the conversation when you're talking about budgets, whether it be setting budgets, managing budgets, and dealing with unexpected expenses. Don't forget the resources that are needed to continue a good process safety program. Make sure that you've adequately funded the facilities for process safety. So not only your personnel, but your capital, making sure that you provide funding for those safeguards that are necessary, whether it be proper equipment from the purchase side, from maintenance side, instrumentation for interlocks and safety systems, control systems, things of that sort. Make sure that you have adequate funding for that. Mm-hmm. And then also look at funding for outside expertise when it's needed. Your own internal people, you may have the training, but if they're activities that are only done every few years. Audits are done every 3 years. PHAs are done on a process every 5 years. Some mechanical integrity inspections may only be required every 5 to 10 years. So when you've got activities that require specialized expertise, but you don't do them routinely, it just doesn't make economic sense to try and do them with your own in-house resources. So those may be cases where it makes sense to go ahead and fund outside expertise, bring the people that are knowledgeable and that work with that day in and day out to do it, and let your folks focus on the more ongoing activities that are better use of their knowledge and expertise.
Yeah, there's a lot of process safety knowledge that folks who aren't in it all the time like we are, they either never know or they knew and they've forgotten. The other piece of that as well is 20, 30 years ago, you had staffing levels in chemical companies or oil and gas companies that, you know, were at a higher level than they are now. And engineers and maintenance folks and those sorts of people are, in general, at least our experience, I think you would agree, are flat out trying to do what they need to do to keep the operation running safely from a day-to-day standpoint to quality improvements and you know, all those sorts of things that come in manufacturing.
Right.
And asking someone to do a PHA when they haven't done a PHA in 3 years, number one, is a challenge no matter what, but throwing that on top of the other 60 hours of work that they need to do every week is really not the way to make sure that your PHA is getting done and getting the level it needs to. Go ahead.
Yeah, speaking of staffing, there are some other things to keep in mind. You want to talk about that, Rob?
Yeah, so if you look at staffing, obviously staffing is one of those, you know, what happens at high levels in companies, right? Budgets we've already talked about. And the other real thing is headcount. And so staffing decisions are important. So what are some of the things that are important for us to consider, right? Well, if we're talking about operators, the number of operators that we have in a facility, we've got to make sure that we've got adequate resources for operators to perform their, you know, their, to safely operate their process in all phases. And that includes abnormal situations as well as emergency situations.
Right.
So startup, shutdown, any sort of emergency, we need to make sure that we've got the resources available to, from an operator standpoint, to make sure that we can do what we need to do to keep everything inside the equipment, which is where we want it to stay, and make sure that we've got enough operators for that.
And that can be a little confusing to people who may infrequently visit a control room or operating area, and they'll see people sitting there reading the newspaper or just chatting away. And it's like, man, it looks like we got way too many people. They have too much time on their hands.
Yeah.
What is going on here? This is way overstaffed.
Yeah.
Well, what it may be is that everything is running smoothly and going according to plan, and that's fine. They may not be needed all the time in that mode, but they're there if something goes wrong and they need extra hands to keep things under control and prevent it from leading to one of these catastrophic incidents like we talked about at Formosa Plastics or BP. You need to have those people there, trained, available, knowledgeable, ready to jump on the issue as soon as a deviation starts. And if you cut the staffing too low from an operational standpoint, those frontline people, you're not going to have that response time available.
Right. And when we're making those decisions about operator staffing, we got to understand that there are multiple modes of operation. And we want to make sure that we have enough folks available for all modes. Okay,
right.
So that's operators. Maintenance techs, we need to make sure that we've got adequate maintenance staff to make sure that we can do all our PMs and inspections on safety, especially on safety critical equipment. I mean, we want them to do all of our calibrations for quality and all that stuff as well. But from a process safety standpoint, which is where we're focusing here, we want to make sure that we've got adequate maintenance staff to do all of the PMs that we need to do, all of the inspections and testing that we need to do on interlocks or pressure relief devices or things like that, to make sure that they operate the way they're supposed to and we don't have any releases. Supervision is another area, right? So supervision, we need to make sure that we've got adequate supervisors to ensure that training is completed, that people are working safely, that the things that have to get done are getting done, to help interact with other departments, whether it's with maintenance or engineering support, to make sure that those things that are process safety concerns in the specific process, that they're getting the attention they need. And really the supervisors where that comes in. I mentioned engineering support. We need to make sure that we've got adequate engineering support for managing change, for assessing process hazards, for making sure that issues that are affecting the stability of the process, which may end up leading to process safety issues. We want to make sure that there's enough technical support in the area, that those things don't just kind of stay out there wallowing, never getting solved. And the engineering support is the best way to do that. And then the last thing that I'm just going to throw out there is specific to process safety expertise. You need people who are internal experts as well as external experts in various aspects of process safety to make sure that you've got that subject matter expertise when you need it. And whether that's in a PHA, whether that's in some sort of mechanical integrity thing,
or
whether that's in pressure relief or even process design or new process design or designing process, major process changes, all those people need to have a certain level of expertise, and you may or may not have that internally. So you want to make sure that however you get it, that when you're thinking about people, that you're thinking, okay, where are we going to get the needed expertise for process safety? Okay, so that's kind of when you're thinking about staffing, what are some of the things mm-hmm. to think about? What's next?
Yeah, so just to kind of wrap all that up is right. that when you're making budget decisions from a high level standpoint, make sure to consider the process safety needs. A lot of times edicts come from upper management says we've got to cut budgets. So everybody 10% across the board budget cuts. Before you make blanket edicts such as that, make sure to consider what the impact is and ensure that you can still maintain the minimum requirements for a process safety program. And in particular, that comes up frequently on mechanical integrity and those MI inspection schedules. You really can't let those lag beyond their due dates, or you could have some equipment failures, which often lead to these catastrophic incidents.
Absolutely.
As we talked about earlier, don't cut staffing without considering the impacts on your experience, expertise, and abilities to respond to emergencies or abnormal operations that may come up. And finally, as Rob was talking about, don't necessarily rely on in-house resources solely because they're cheaper if needed.
Were you saying, I think you were saying cheaper in air quotes, right? Because
Yeah. So just the bottom line may not tell the whole story. Exactly. And so you need to look at what the expertise is that's needed and make sure that you get the right resources for the right activities.
Yeah. You don't want to be, you don't want to be penny smart and pound foolish, thinking just of short term cheaper. That could end up being a very expensive decision down the line.
So okay. Resources.
Yeah,
we've got some references to give people if they want more information on these.
Yeah, we've kind of gone a little bit all over the place here because it's kind of a broad topic. But we're trying to focus on, you know, how do we give or suggest some of the ideas that senior management really should have at any place that handles highly hazardous mm-hmm. chemicals. Obviously, there's great resources out there, and we will put these in the show notes, of course, but I'll list just a few of them. So first off, there actually is from the Chemical Safety Board, there's a best practice guidance for corporate boards of directors and executives in the offshore oil and gas industry for major accident prevention. Now, it's focused on oil and gas, but the things they talk about are applicable across the board for anyone that's handling highly hazardous chemicals. There's also a couple of documents, I guess I'll say, from the Center for Chemical Process Safety that Molly mentioned earlier. One of them is called Inspiring Process Safety Leadership, the Executive Role. And then the other one is one that we've kind of talked about a little bit here, which is the Business Case for Process Safety. So both of those from CCPS are valuable, and it would be worthwhile for folks in senior positions to take a look at those. And then finally, bringing it back to our podcast, we actually do have a few podcasts that probably would be of use to people who are in upper management. First off is episode 40, and that's the evolution of process safety culture. Obviously, culture is a key aspect to making sure that your organization correctly manages and prioritizes process safety. Episode number 47, what new plant managers should know. And that was with guest Nat Wiener. And Nat, having been a plant manager in the past at a number of different PSM facilities, had some great lessons learned there. Episode number 48 talked about management of organizational change, or MOOC, which is something that a lot of organizations don't really think too much about. And as part of PSM, we actually do need to do the management of change process for organizational change. So that podcast would be worthwhile. A couple more here. Number 60, how organizational structure impacts process safety is a good one. And that was with our guest, Jilsa Montero, and really gets into, especially for large companies, how the structure that we put in for our organization really does impact. And she has some work that she's done with some other folks that really identify the some of the ways that can kind of backfire on you and kind of cause a process safety incident. And then the last one I'll throw out there is episode 70, Improving Process Safety Culture. And that was with Peter Arena. And that was one, I think, from early this year or maybe late last year. And that one actually is another one related to culture in a way that Peter and his organization have really worked to improve their process safety culture. So there are some resources. As I said, we'll put those in the show notes. Hopefully, those of you who are listening got a lot out of it. Molly, anything else?
That's about it. Hopefully you can share this with your upper management. If they are not familiar with a podcast, it might be worthwhile for them to take a listen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you have a comment about this episode or an idea for a future episode or a question about process safety, we would love to hear from you. So go ahead and send us an email at podcast@amplifyconsultants.com. Finally, our goal at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems. It's our firm belief that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like the ones we talked about in this episode at BP and Formosa Plastics. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey.
And thank you, Molly, for helping me to get through all of this information. I think it's important. And to all of you in the audience, thank you for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.